Welcome, everybody. It's Now I See a Person Institute. Today it's Emma McIntosh, myself, and Dr. Susan Swim and David Abramovich in conversation today. And Dr. Swim is gonna lead the conversation just now.
So, hello, and good morning here in California. We're all at different time zones. We thought that, I don't know if I'm leading the conversation or I'm starting the conversation, but we're co-leaders. We're co-creators, truly. And so one of the things that I thought about that we could talk about this morning is that unfortunately we're not able to go to the ISI on Sunday. And it's such a wonderful creation that I really feel.
Susan, do you want to just say what ISI is?
Yes, it's International Summer Institute. And you can learn more about it just by Googling it or going on Facebook. And it's something that has traditionally been offered every year. And it's where people from all over the world coalesce about ideas that we're very passionate about. And so this year it was on Zoom, and I thought that we were all going to be able to finally be there at the same time, but we weren't. And so one of the things I wrote on our Facebook page was, if we had the opportunity, we would have shared the voices of our clients and our subsequent current mission. The distancing of mental health that we talked about in 1991, we have been revisiting in 2022. These utterances, words, and ideas reflect labels and services to wellness that are often deficiently led and unfortunately oppressive, and can take away one's self-identity and self-agency, create new and disabling traumas, and create divisions between those that suffer and their families, peers, and their previous relationships, and provide what our clients describe as a war-making or oppressive power to wellness or recovery, where wellness and recovery is very, very hard to obtain. And decades ago, we wrote about this in Houston in 1991, and many of our colleagues continue to do so as we are interested in. And unfortunately, we're still immersed in a world that often unintentionally marginalizes and victimizes people who suffer. And our research continues to reflect that based on our clients' voices, that labels and deficiencies, interventions, again, unfortunately, can lead to a venue where our clients report that they are more traumatized than the original events that led to their symptoms. So in essence, that the traumas that they had that led to their symptoms, that their search for wellness, that they've become even more traumatized. As one of our clients described it, it's another PTSD layer placed on another PTSD layer that's almost more difficult than the original PTSD that they incurred. And that their self-identities, their needs, their uniqueness must override the dominant deficiency discourses that has prevailed for decades. We stated in this quote on Facebook that our people, our world, deserve to be seen and treated as unique people suffering. They yearn the novel experiences to wellness where they're not treated as a diagnosis. They say this is not acceptable for them anymore. So this really is something that we feel is very important, and we want to spend some time on the podcast talking about this and reflecting what our clients are saying. Because, you know, one of the things we often talk about is that our theoretical orientation, our philosophy of being with people is a living philosophy. And one of the things that has happened in the last year is that we have a plethora of clients coming in that feel that their experiences and their suffering has marginalized them further by seeking treatment. And I think if everyone remembers, we were writing on last year about extraordinarily normal, about how when our clients are able to transform, that they're able to transform and create new self identities that they've labeled for themselves that are extraordinarily normal. And that was something that we still continue to be passionate about. But currently, with having so many clients talking about the power imbalance and their fight to be able to have an identity, and their treatment process is, it really reflects such profound suffering. And so today I was talking to a client and I read to her what we were had posted on Facebook. I had asked her if there was anything that she wanted to add to this. And we had talked about also a client that we had seen before many, many years ago and had co-wrote an article with. And I had explained to her some of the kind of warlike or oppressive endeavors that she journeyed with to become well, and how she really reflected on the team at the Houston Galveston Institute at that point in time and helping her achieve wellness. And, you know, we all know her story is that she became extraordinarily normal. She's, I think at this point in time in doing medicine and in another state and has not revisited what happened to her previously. So when talking about this with the client, her thoughts were that, let me just pull this up very quickly. She said, people who receive diagnoses shouldn't let themselves get discouraged because the mind is so much bigger than the categories. And our mind, our being, and our experiences are so much bigger than those who are made to put us in a box. It's dark inside this box. And when she was talking about her journey still has this darkness and that there's holes in this darkness, but she's seeing options out. And we were kind of making some similarities to both of their journeys to wellness. She said that for this client that we were talking about, I think it's been 30 years ago now, that her quote was that she realized what she deserved. So maybe David or Emma, you guys would like to talk about this, that I just kind of started this conversation and what your ideas are on this.
Well, this is David. How are you? You know, I think it's the analogy of being placed in a box and having a very poignant in so many ways. I think like when you do therapy in a traditional sense, so many things are put in a box. You know, your diagnosis is put in a box, and the way you treat a diagnosis is put in a box. You know, you're diagnosed with X, so the interventions are A, B, and C, very box-like. When you do therapy, you do it in a box, you know, with fluorescent light above you, and a cold therapist asking you questions, almost an interrogation-like system. When you are unfortunately sometimes hospitalized, you're put in a box and not given any rights. In this type of environment, in a box, it is dark. There is no hope. But when you see a person as a person, the box is ripped open and the hope is unlimited, you know. And from that, people heal from the light of beautiful things that are happening in the world and opportunities. These extra therapeutic factors that we talk about are seen and not miss a box. These extra therapeutic factors outside of the therapy group that provide us with hope and allow us to move forward are thwarted. So I think it's really important to not do therapy in a box, but do therapy with an open mind and open ideas and really listen to what the client is saying. And they will lead you out of their own personal box and into a world of hope and healing and transcendence.
So David, when you think about this, like I know that we've been talking about a box, but when you think about these personal stories of they're attempting to get well, and when they come in and they're maybe their discourse and their sorrow is not so much about what happened to them previous to services, what are some of the first thoughts that maybe go through your head?
You know, that these people have suffered greatly and have been traumatized, and that the current system is not only re-traumatizing them, but making the trauma so much worse. Instead of gently healing, it's really like putting blame on these people as if they did something wrong, as if they're the ones that inflicted this pain upon them. So I think there's no kindness and there's no benevolence whatsoever. And I think that therapy should be the exact opposite. It should be kind, gentle, and welcoming. And when that happens, people will heal. When people are heard, I think over and over again, it's not only when we do therapy, we're not only fighting, this diagnosis, but we're fighting the system and the chains that and the tentacles that the diagnosis has put upon our clients. Mm-hmm. So we have to break those. And once we break those, people start feeling better and start feeling like people with options and self-determination.
Because it makes me think of someone that we were talking about yesterday or maybe last week. And, you know, it was someone previously that had been on a lot of different medications, had been diagnosed for decades. And now this person who previously was not able to leave the house is, you know, working and just has a completely different type of lifestyle. And it's so interesting to see how they lose this black box. It's not that we ever try to get them, you know, within our orientation of how we're with people. we don't try to ever force our agenda on them. So we would never say you're in a black box and you need to change it. But they see for themselves that this is not a paradigm that's useful for them anymore. And it always seems that when a paradigm is lost, that it's replaced by one that they define that is more workable for them. So Emma, did you have, what were your thoughts like based on this little dialogue?
Yeah, I just, you know, I come back to like the ranch at NYIC, a person institute, like we're in this open space, you know, surrounded by nature, surrounded by horses. We're not boxed in. And we don't use this boxed in language, this clinical kind of psychobabble language. Like we never describe, you know, of course we talk about people that we're in conversation with, their pain, but we don't use clinical words such as depression, anxiety, you know, triggers, coping skill sets, or anything like that. You know, we're there to listen, and if you use kind of limiting language like that with people, I feel then that doesn't let them self-determine, and it doesn't let them give them space to think about who they are and where their future is going, you know. I think that's something that just resonated with me there. And we also don't put, you know, because we work in a team, we're not constrained as much within the time limits, because if you know, we're working with a person and another person arrives and that person's not, you know, ready to finish their session, then one or two of us will continue with that person and one of us will go over to the new person that's come in. So it's, we never kind of limit people. You know, we don't use limiting language. We don't have time limits. We don't have, and I think when people have that space to navigate through things, it's much more meaningful and it's much more personable for them to start that healing process. That's something that has just resonated with me whilst listening to that, those beautiful comments that the person gave us yesterday, actually. So, you know, I've learned so much from that person, and just being guided by them, it's just so much more meaningful.
And so, you know, I think that's what we're trying to use this time for right now, is to give our format to be able to express their voices, just like we do in our continuous research, and to also let people that may not be familiar with our type of work know that there's options out there other than we do ABC. I think ABC sometimes works for, like, in medical institutions. You know, I was reading, you know, something the other day, and they were even talking about how the ABCs sometimes even are oppressive to practitioners, that sometimes they don't have that ability to kind of work outside a box, since we're talking about boxes right now, and see maybe other things that are happening, because even physical limitations or physical challenges don't always fit. What fits one doesn't always fit the other one. And people are so complex. And, you know, I think that from what we're hearing from our clients right now, that they're crying out to be heard and not to be heard and treated, that they come in, that, you know, they have to have a diagnosis, like sometimes even with the first phone call. Then there's a treatment plan that follows that diagnosis. And so they often feel like they're losing their humanity, and that there's a hopelessness that arises in attempting to have wellness, and they're at a very, very vulnerable stage. And so I hope that these conversations are useful. I know that they're useful for us. I know that they're useful for our clients. So if you would like to learn more about our work, you can contact us at www.nowiseeaperson.com, and we would be open to more conversations about this. So David and Emma, do you have anything to say to kind of wrap this up?
The only thing that I would say is, I know it's difficult for people that are struggling, but there are options out there, and we would be happy to guide them if they reach out to us.
Yeah. And just don't put people into boxes, please.
Yeah. I guess it's a reason why there's that term thinking outside of the box. So we hope that everyone has a wonderful week, and we look forward to presenting and dialoguing about our reflections on our work and honoring our clients' voices, and perhaps being able just to provide a few novel ideas that might be of help. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.